when I look around our locker room, I don't see guys who are a problem. You'd be surprised at, you know, how often that can be the case in a locker room, or you have certain guys who are just haven't figured it out. I feel like, you know, in our locker room, just as people, the way they work, the way they, you know, serve their teammates, the way they play down to the very last guy, I just feel really good about our group. You know, at the end of the day, what matters is wins and losses, and we have to, you know, have a better record than we do right now.
Kirk Cousins surveying the locker room and the damage. Vikings 1-4 after what was a really entertaining game last night on national TV. And we're going to dive into our pie chart of blame and silver linings and things we learned on NFL Sunday. A quick word for Federated Mutual Insurance Company. Federated is also on Twitter at FederatedINS if you want fresh, relevant risk management content on a variety of topics, like, for instance, working in extreme temperatures or distracted driving and other topics. You can check out FederatedINS on Twitter for those tips and go to the website federatedinsurance.com for trusted resources and information about your local marketing representative. If you're a business owner, Federated is here for you since 1904, based in Owatonna, Minnesota. At Federated Insurance, it's our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Wilson surveys, fires, and it is going to be caught by DK Metcalf for a touchdown. That is an unbelievable drive.
Yep, 1-4 to start the season. And what I think what is the biggest buzzkill if you're... I mean, there's two types of Vikings fans. There's some that are like, yes, that was clutch. Tank for Trevor. And we'll talk about that. But then if you were actually rooting for the Vikings to win and turn their season around, the fact that they put out one of the best first half performances in recent history, like to shut that high-powered offense down and shut them out completely in the first half and to move the ball and control time of possession and to look that good, and then for it to just flip and for you to look like bumbling idiots for like 10 minutes in the third quarter,
yep,
and then to regroup and come back and have a big scoring drive and even make the right decision on fourth and inches from the 5-yard line, and we can talk about that and debate that. Just a roller coaster game for the Vikings that ultimately winds up putting them in a 1-4 hole. Judd Zolgad.
I really enjoyed this game. I'm going to start by saying that. It was a fun game to watch. And my stance towards this game is, one, Phil, you're right. The game plan was great. Like, this is as good a game plan defensively as Zim can do for this year, given the players that he has to work with. Russell Wilson doing what he did was no surprise. This loss would rip your guts out and hurt if the Vikings were good. Like, if this was a good team and it went back and forth like that, and you lost that game in that way, in that stadium, against that team, the loss would really, really hurt. But I've said this all year, and I will continue to pound this drum. I think what we need to look at is the growth potential from these games for this team among the players that can grow. And I think a lot of guys last night got very valuable experience in an environment against a quarterback who is going to walk into Canton. Like, this is not going to – the first ballot in immediately. So I look at that game – last night, and I think my new parameters for Vikings games, at least for 2020, are this. Did I enjoy it? Because if it's a piece of crap, then no, I didn't. But that was fun last night. Like, there were mistakes, but that's fine. It was fun. Did I enjoy it? Did I see progress from those who you want to progress? So there are certain vets that, okay, if they play well, that's fine. If they don't, that's fine too, but I don't expect much. But there's a core group of young players who I think that on a week-to-week basis, if you're a fan, you can basically hone in on, and you know who those players are. Do they progress? Last night, I thought the answer to not all, but a lot of those players, and the question was yes. So those are the things I think are most important. I don't think that this loss and losses like this and the Titans loss should devastate Vikings fans who have to realize, even if the team does not, that we are, just to put it as simple as possible, not dealing with an open window season in 2020.
I think the question becomes, how open can the window be in 2021, and what are the things that need to happen for the window to start opening again and it's in 2021?
And by the way, that is a great discussion.
Yes, and we will continue to have. I mean, that is the discussion from now until January at this point, right? I mean, it's they could beat the Falcons, and now I think they would have a better chance of beating the Falcons next week if they hadn't fired Dan Quinn yet. But now that they fired a coach and all the players are going to feel guilty for a week, The Falcons might put up a fight. I still think the Vikings probably win that game against the Falcons, but then they get Aaron Rodgers and they've got Tom Brady the second half of the schedule. But we'll unpack all of that over the next several months. Let's just go back specifically to yesterday's game, gentlemen.
Now on Mackey and Judd.
This chart makes it as clear as I can to you.
The pie chart of blame.
You want to blame somebody?
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
It's our weekly pie chart. We've only had one pie chart of praise last week, and now we go back to the pie chart of blame. Judd, you do the honors. How are you carving up your Vikings pie chart of blame?
I believe I surprised the masses last week by having a very small pie chart, which for me is rare. For you, Phil, is the ordinary thing, but I ordinarily have a bigger pie chart of blame and or praise, and I think I kept it pretty condensed last week in our first pie chart of praise. Pie chart of blame, I'm going back six parts.
Wow.
Ooh, six parts.
I'm going six
parts.
The
Rock knows how you feel about pie.
I'm going to start from the bottom and attempt to work my way up here in a pie chart that I assembled at approximately 2:45 in the morning. So if there's some discrepancies, please forive me.
Yeah, we're all kind of dragging
here
today.
Yeah.
5% of my pie chart of blame, Alexander Mattison. I give him a very small piece, but
I love
that fourth and inches, go back and watch it again and again and again, and there's an instinctual opening there in which you could basically just fall down going forward, and it's a first down.
It's actually pretty amazing, even the hole that he did choose, how he still didn't get the first down. But here we are.
Yeah, he sort of ran into, it's sort of like he saw traffic and said, I'm going to get in traffic. It's like, but dude, you're, hold on a second here. If you just take the exit here, you've got free sailing. He's like, no. I enjoy being stuck in rush hour. 5% young Alexander Mattison, who undoubtedly, hopefully, will learn. 10%. This is very low, but it's not your fault, kid. It's the guy that signed you. Drew Samia. 4 penalties, 3 accepted. It's a train wreck. There are some guys playing who probably shouldn't be, but you see them playing and you're like, he's developing. You know what? I can see that. Yeah, you know what? Not a great idea to play him now, but I get where it's going, right? And then there's poor Drew. I don't understand. What are you doing to him? So 10% to him. 10% the blame, also slash some praise. Russell Wilson. I got to give him some credit here. Like, he gets the ball with, what, 1:55 left or something like that?
Yeah.
And here's the sick thing. He got the ball, and my thought was, I can't wait to see this. Like, because it might not end well for the Seahawks, but you knew that it would end close to the end zone, right? Like, there was never a thought of, oh, they're screwed now. They can't score. So 10% just goes to a quarterback who I absolutely love and deserves praise and respect at every turn. 20% the head coach, Zim. Zim's got to take it because his defense allowed that drive. His defense, I actually thought, played pretty well at times. And I think there's differing views on how the defense played. But against that quarterback, to have that first half is impressive. But he's still the coach. The construction of the roster, at least partially, and we'll get to this one, falls on him. So there were enough decisions made where, you know, they lost. He's got to take some blame. But I certainly don't dump on him completely. So sure. No. Just a 20% piece of pie for Zim.
Okay.
30%, and I'm going to continue to go to this well in 2020 after games like this where certain positions just can't play. Rick Spielman, 30%. This is your roster. And the fact is your starting right guard in Elfline was bad, and the guy behind him is unplayable, and yet they have to play. And you know, Where's the thought process a week ago or so of saying, can Dakota Dozier play right guard, and can Ezra Cleveland, who I drafted in, I believe, the second round, slide in and play left guard? I mean, he is a left tackle, but it's left guard. It's still the left side. Rick Spielman, 30%. Like, some of this is offensive line-wise, I'm sorry, but for lack of a better term, you guys, it's just gross to watch.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, I'm sorry. I missed one smaller piece, but this gets us to 100%, but it's not much smaller. It's the guy that I'm not going to let off the hook this week again. Some people will. It's Kirk Cousins. Go back and understand this about that game. Pick up the box score or the play-by-play. And everyone, and rightfully so, because it's fun. Everyone's going to talk about what? Zimmer's decision to go for it on fourth down, right?
Yep.
They didn't make it. Seattle gets the ball. Oh, my God. Seattle drives down, and you made a mistake, which I don't think he did. But anyway, that's not what lost the game. It is the 1 minute and, was it, 35-second span in the third quarter in which you surrendered 21 points. And now the Cousins apologists are like, well, that's not Kirk. That's not on Kirk. That's not. Okay.
It's never on Kirk.
It's never on
Kirk. It's never on Kirk. As long as an offensive lineman did one thing bad, it's never on Kirk.
The interception that he threw that resulted in the Carson touchdown run is all on Kirk. And furthermore, I'm going to tell you this. Before you bring me the film and say, you don't understand, here's what happened on this play. I've watched the All-22 74 times and drank 18 cups of coffee. You don't get it. Here's what's on Kirk, folks. The mental makeup of that meltdown. It is incumbent on your quarterback, who is eating up a huge portion of your salary cap, after you give up 14 points, so you're down 14-13, to calm the situation and put together the drive that he put together on the next drive. And final thing, why was he able to do it on the next drive? Because in Kirk's weird little mind,
you're so right.
The pressure had been relieved by going down 21-13. At 14-13, it's a fire drill, and all hell is breaking loose. And I need a veteran, leader, calm guy, a guy who, as Phil played at the start of this show, is telling me what's what in my locker room, who has the audacity to tell me how my locker room operates. He is literally, and listen to me closely, because there's no other way to put this, peeing his pants. He is peeing his pants, and he has no ability to stop anything. So you want to tell me that's my captain? That's my leader? He's going to tell me what my locker room is about? No. So take your All-22 and shove it. I don't want to see it. What I want you to understand is the mentality of doing what he did. One pass, picked off, touchdown, that is Kirk Cousins in a nutshell. So take your film and put it where the sun don't shine. I'm tired of it.
I want to dig deeper on this with you for a second, because I think you're the first one, like, we've all sort of sensed since sometime mid-season in Kirk's first year, is like, all right, like, yeah, he's got the ability to put up big numbers, and he's got a big arm, and he's pretty accurate for the most part. And when you give him time to throw and you're playing a bad opponent at noon on a Sunday, like, he looks amazing sometimes, right? But it's been hard to pinpoint other than just, like, he chokes in primetime, which isn't always the case. Like, sometimes he goes toe-to-toe with the Rams in primetime on a Thursday night, right? Sometimes he daggers the Saints in a playoff game. So it's not as simple as just saying, like, he's worthless in primetime. It's a little more complicated. And I think that's the best I've heard anyone articulate the problem with Kirk Cousins and sort of the predictability of when he's on and when he's off. And it's that subtle moment where the pressure goes from this is a tight game to, oh, now no one really expects. Now, like, the game is sort of out of hand because now you're down by, they've scored 21 unanswered, and now, like, the train's off the tracks. And in those situations, when it seems like the train is off the tracks, he's calm again.
Yes.
And I think you're 100% right.
That's him.
It's like the difference between 14-13 or 13-7 when you're up still. And when you're down 21-13, it's like, oh, now I can just drop back and throw it because the game's out of hand, right?
Kirk Cousins is absolutely fine after he takes the fall. He can dust himself off like nobody I've seen.
I don't know if I go that far.
Wait. The only problem, I'm serious. The problem is given the opportunity to stop the fall, he has no idea how to do it. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's spot on.
Like, it's like, Kirk, don't fall. But I don't know what to do. Oh, now I've fallen? Oh, hey, Adam, let's go play ball.
Yeah, it's not.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
It's a mentality. Like, it's a psychological hang-up that he has.
Yeah. All right, so give us a summary of your pie chart.
Oh, hold on a second here. I'm sorry about that. All right. I went 5% to Alexander Mattison. I went 10% to Russell Wilson and Drew Samia. 20% to Zim, 25% to Cousins, and 30% to the architect of an offensive line that is Rick Spielman.
All right, I've got 5 pieces of pie, which is a lot for me.
Whoa! Wow.
5 pieces of pie here, okay? I've got, we'll just start here. 10% Drew Samia. He is, without hyperbole, well.
I think it's fair.
Just stick with me here.
You got it.
He's right.
He is, without hyperbole, the worst regular/starting offensive lineman in the NFL. The Pro Football Focus grade had him as the worst going into this game. Like, he was the worst graded offensive lineman going into a game in which he had 4 penalties and got trucked a number of times off the line of scrimmage. The Vikings have had some pretty bad offensive linemen in the last 10 years or so. I guess 2012 was the last time that I felt really good about the Vikings offensive line, especially as run blockers and road graders. So over that 8-year period, we've seen some TJ Clemmings, we've seen Pat Elflein, like, we've seen some bad offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. He's the worst we've seen in 8 to 10 years. He is 6'5", 310 pounds, and gets pushed around like he's skinny arms Rob Lowe from those whatever commercials. We're trying to open the jar of mayonnaise. Like, dude, you're 6'5", 310. How are you getting shoved back 7 yards off the line of scrimmage every time there's a pass? So 10% to Drew Samia. To Declan's question, that's it? I'm also giving 10% to the right side of the offensive line and Alexander Mattison. So Samia, Brian O'Neill, and Alexander Mattison on the 4th and inches, which was the absolute right call by the Vikings, to end the game right there. You were moving the ball down the field. You would run for 200 yards at that point and 5 or 6 yards per carry. You just need to lean forward one more time. And you know what? Drew Samia had a couple nice run blocks that they highlighted on Chris Collinsworth was trying to praise him because he felt bad at the end of the game. But you guys, how do you, on Madison's part, if you watch that, and we watched it a bunch of times on Ventline last night, you can go back and watch Ventline on the Purple Daily podcast YouTube channel. Alex Mattison just has to either fall further ahead in the gap that he's going into or just literally go to the right where there's a wide open space for you to maybe even score a touchdown, but for sure to gain a couple yards. And then, again, like, Brian O'Neill and Drew Samia, like, if it's on you guys, I think some of it's on Madison, but if it's on you guys, you just need one extra push and the game is over, and they couldn't get it done. The trio of those guys couldn't get it done, so 10% to them. I feel a little bad about this because I think overall the game plan was pretty excellent, especially the first half. I am going to give 10% to Mike Zimmer in big games. They did lose the game.
Yeah.
They do have a pattern of beating the teams they're mostly supposed to beat, but then whether it's some of these big road playoff games against the Eagles and the Niners where they just got ran out of the stadium, or the Seattle games going back to the Blair Walsh miss, Packers and Bears games on the road, like, there's just a late game. I don't know if it's a meltdown factor or it's like it's kind of woven into the Vikings DNA under Mike Zimmer that they don't win games like this.
Because he sort of panics.
But overall, he was really, really good game planning and scheming last night.
Oh, he was great. No, but I'm saying that there, I think you can identify in big Vikings games for the most part, I think you can go back and identify actual moments in which it's clear that there is a reason why he is melting down. And I think when you do that, your team sort of follows suit.
Yeah, and there doesn't seem to be a great chemistry between him and Kirk Cousins in these moments where it's like, all right, the game is sort of shifting and you need the two most important figures in that stadium for you, your head coach and your quarterback, just sort of get together and figure it out. And they don't seem like they get together and figure it out. Like when you watch the Packers, Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers get together and figure it out. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick get together, figure it out. Now I'm listing Hall of Famers now, but like those guys just, it almost seems like Mike Zimmer doesn't want to deal with it. Kirk, if you're going through problems, talk to Gary. Talk to somebody else.
Yes.
Talk to Stefanski last year, right?
Because it's all about one thing. I'm running my defense, Kirk.
and he did it very well for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
I'm giving 20% to Russell Wilson just being a cheat code. I think there's a certain Russell Wilson factor that you're just not going to overcome. And the Vikings did as good of a job in this game and in the Blair Walsh missed field goal game, the two close Seattle losses that Mike Zimmer has coached. I think there's just a certain part of him, though, that is not going to be denied if you give him a chance late in the game like that. So I agree with the 4th-and-1 decision. I get that if you kick a field goal in that spot, you're up by 8 and you can't lose in regulation. But it's not about can't lose. It's about win.
Right.
And going forward on 4th-and-inches is the win.
Yes.
So I was good with it. And Russell Wilson's just ridiculous. He's one of the best quarterbacks of our generation. And that leaves one last piece of pie. And a lot of people might disagree with 50% of the pie going to this. But 50% of my pie chart of blame is Kirk Cousins just flat not being good enough. He stripped twice because he can't feel pressure. He throws a terrible game-changing interception. And I get that he brought the Vikings back down and Judd, you know, brilliant point about, like, the pressure's off and now I can sort of freewheel. But I just think we need to raise the bar for what we expect from our quarterbacks in this state. Like, I don't know why we're so protective. If you want the Vikings to win a Super Bowl, how do you watch that game last night and defend Kirk Cousins as the starting quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings? How do you watch football on Sunday on Red Zone Channel and watch what some of these guys are doing on a regular basis? How do you watch what Josh Allen's doing and sit there and defend Kirk Cousins? Like, he's not garbage. He's not a backup. He's a starting caliber quarterback, but he is not good enough to lead this team to a Super Bowl. And last night, both teams had flaws last night. Both teams had injuries last night. And ultimately, one guy steps up in the second half and the other guy melts down. Like, it's a fact.
I feel
raise the bar.
I feel like fewer Vikings fans do tolerate it. I feel like a year or two back, a lot more did. But the realization with Kirk is very, very simple. He is good enough to get you to the playoffs. And there it will end. And so it's not going to change. And so, I don't know. Are Vikings fans so desperate to keep getting to the playoffs and maybe the Super Bowl that they don't care if they would lose? Because the problem, too, is you're building, it feels like from a 2020 standpoint, you're building a lot of things with this team that look to be down the road positive and look to set you up to be in a position here pretty shortly to pop, but you still got the quarterback. And so that, to me, is the most daunting thing, because until that guy's not your quarterback, you don't have the chance to truly, truly pop. And then the really daunting part is finding the right one.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
And I don't even think, like, it is daunting to find the right one, but I think if you sort of free yourself from that and it's like, listen, evaluate, do your homework.
Yeah.
It's not a guarantee that you're in the fans, like, everyone has to be okay with whenever they move on from Kirk and they go try to draft the next guy. It is sort of an inexact science. And there's always guys like Lamar Jackson that fall to the bottom of the first round, or Russell Wilson falls to the third round, or Tom Brady. Like, and just because you draft Justin Fields, number 2 overall, doesn't mean that he's guaranteed to be great. Look at Sam Darnold. Like, that guy's going to be a backup probably in 2 years. And some of it's bad infrastructure with the Jets. But I think if we sort of take a step back and say, you know what, the only way to find a great actual needle-moving franchise quarterback is to try.
Yes. Number 1, it's to try. And number 2, it's then to morph in your franchise whatever has to be morphed into making him comfortable and him succeeding. So the one thing you cannot do, and it's been proven, you cannot draft a quarterback now and basically say, and here's how we play. You draft him and say, I've been watching you in college, and we're about to change our entire offense.
Because of you, yeah.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
So 10% Drew Samia, 10% right side of the offensive line and Alex Mattison for not finding a way to get 1 yard and ending the game. 10% Mike Zimmer in general in big games. 20% Russell Wilson is a cheat code. And 50% Kirk Cousins is not good enough to win games like that. Declan, what's your pie?
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
As we finished Bentline last night, and as I was trying to go to bed and then even driving to work this morning and doing pre-production work this morning, I was honestly having a pretty difficult time putting together this pie chart. I mean, you look at the execution they made in the first half. I don't really look at Kirk Cousins, and I can't really put a whole lot of blame on him. So at first, I was just going to give one piece of pie to one certain thing from this game. But I didn't. I backed off. I have two other things.
Oh, you were going to go with the one?
I was going to go one piece of pie, but I don't think it's fair.
I want to know what that is. Like, can you give us both? Give us both versions of your pie chart. What's the whole pie?
The whole pie is Vikings fans. 100% is Vikings fans.
What?
The fraud, and not all of them, the frauds that wanted them to kick the field goal. I'm sick of that. How many times do we want to see a team have the cojones to go for it on fourth down? You're 1-3. Your season's on the brink of disaster, right? You're in Seattle. You can pull off a rare win. Go for the fourth and down and go for the kill shot. Amen. Why in any circumstance would you want to put the ball back in the best quarterback's hands? Why would you want to do that? You're playing to lose. Then you're going to go into overtime and you're for sure going to win it there? No. Take the ball out of his hands.
I love it. I think that's what your pie chart should be, because I agree with you. And plus, it's so easy to sit there in retrospect and be like, well, if you would have done this. No. Those decisions, you have to make a decision in the moment, what you think of it. And in the moment, the right decision was to try to end the game. If it was 4th and 4 and they're like, or if it was, I would even say this, if they were up by 6 and a field goal gets it to 9.
Yeah, that's
kick a field goal.
Different, yes.
But if it gets it to 8, I know that, well, they still have to do the 2-point conversion and whatnot. I would rather just take my shot at ending the game in that spot.
And you're in this game, keep in mind, you're going against what looks to be one of the worst defenses that the Seahawks have ever had, and it's awful. They can't stop anything.
Yeah, the Vikes had 450 yards of offense.
So think about that. Think about if you're Zim, and at that point in time, after going for it twice in the first half on 4th and 1, think about if your message then is, I don't think we can make this. Like, the fact that they didn't make it is a miracle.
Yeah, here's the other thing, okay? When it comes down to it, there's so many things, we're parsing all these things apart, okay? When it comes down to it, when you're trying to figure out how good of a job did your coach do and how good of a job did your starting quarterback do, when your team racks up 450 yards of offense and your team holds a high-powered offense and Hall of Fame quarterback scoreless in the first half, and even when that team comes back to life in the second half, they still only wind up, like Russell Wilson still only averaged like 6.5 yards per attempt. He threw a bad interception. Like, if you were to, don't tell me what the score is, just lay out the game flow as I just explained it. And then at the end, I tell you, and they still lost. Aren't you wondering, how does a coach and a starting quarterback not win a game in which they're up 2 touchdowns,
you know what's funny,
on a scoreless Seattle team?
You know what's funny?
Those are the leaders of this team.
If you gave me that, if you had come in here on Friday with the script, that script exactly, I think I would have gotten it. I think I would have said, I can't tell you exactly what, but there was a period where Kirk melted down. I think I would have gotten it. Because if you take away the stupid pick, the Vikings win that game.
Hey, you held them to 20 points, man. Yes, you gave us a chance at the end, but I got 3 words for you. You like that?
Think about it. If you had gone,
that was actual audio from right before the 2-minute warning at the fourth quarter last night.
If you had given me that script, I would have said, Kirk melted down. It didn't last long. But the one thing is, think about if you substituted.
Just a passing shower.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a passing
in Seattle. But if you think about this part, and that is, imagine instead of throwing the pick, that drive is the drive that came after that, which was the short touchdown pass by Cousins, right? You win that game.
Yep.
No problem.
Yep.
Tough win.
Did you want to add on? I think that's a beautiful pie chart.
I think that's it. I mean, I can give you the second one, the real one before the 100% one, before
sure.
I was doubting myself. So, Rich, so the other one would have been 5% to Jeff Gladney simply on the 4th and 10 play that he messed up with DK Metcalf. And yeah. I know I warned on our 3 C's episode on Friday that I was scared whoever's lining up against DK Metcalf because the guy's a freak of nature.
He had a big game.
It's 4th and 10. You have stopped them 3 times in a row, and you just allow a 40-yard bomb down the field. And, like, is that all on Gladney? No, because DK Metcalf's a freak, and Russell Wilson's really good at what he does.
Yeah.
But I do have to put a little bit of blame on that, because you stop him there, the game's over.
Think about, like, the 4th and 10, just that absolute perfect catch and throw. And then on the last play of the game, there wasn't that much daylight. Anthony Harris had great coverage on that play, and it took a perfect throw to an outstretched, full-speed running DK Metcalf.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, I agree with you. The Gladney thing, he got torched a little bit, and I'm sure it was no coincidence that Russell Wilson looked over at a beast wide receiver on a rookie and it was like, all right, we'll do this. 40 yards down
the
field.
That was such a great play, by the way.
Yep.
And then I did have Drew Samia at 60%.
The Rock knows how you feel
awful,
about pie.
Dude. Oh, my God.
It's not his fault, man. It's the Vikings' fault. They keep playing him.
Oh, my God. And then the 35% was the second for the Vikings fan on my second pie chart. So it was going to go 35% Vikings fan, 60% Drew Samia, 5% Jeff Gladney, but I'm admitting that, and it's 100% on the fraudulent Vikings fans who wanted to kick a field goal.
Amazing.
That loss is
the Rock knows how you feel about pie.
Those are the pie charts of blame for a 1-point Vikings loss to the Seattle Seahawks. Let's roll into some positivity here, okay? Let's roll into our silver lining. Let's take one lap around the room. When they lose, we do a pie chart of blame and silver linings. When they win, we do a pie chart of praise and nitpick. So let's just do a quick lap around the room. Judd Zolgad, your Vikings silver lining from yesterday.
Oh, this is so simple. Eric Wilson at linebacker last night. He's been around for a while, so he's not new to the team by any means. And I believe he actually took over when Ben Gideon started to suffer concussions last year. Eric Wilson stepped in as the third linebacker there. But he is now the second. It's Kendricks, Wilson, Barr obviously is hurt and out for the rest of the year. And Eric Wilson last night was absolutely fantastic. Eric Wilson was, you know what he was? I know it's going to shock you guys. He was everything that we had been asking Anthony Barr to be for like the last year plus.
For about 1/20th of the salary.
Yeah, too. He did all of those. He did all of those things. He made what they like to call splash plays.
He even got torched on a play just like Anthony Barr.
And that's okay, because right? Then he came back and made some great plays. But anyway, his emergence in last night's game, which did not look like a fluke. That pick was a really, really nice play and a smart play. That to me, easily the highlight, because that's the type of performance that can be built upon. I believe Anthony Barr might not be back next season now. I think there's every reason to move on and to give Eric Wilson that job. You basically played two guys at that position the majority of the time.
Yeah.
So my bright spot is not hard to pick. It's Eric Wilson.
Man, don't you guys sort of wish you could take the Vikings scouting department and Rick Spielman and just channel how great they are at finding safeties and linebackers, undrafted guys, and like even the higher draft picks become Hall of Famers like Harrison Smith. They're great at linebackers and safeties, and Mike Zimmer is great at molding linebackers and safeties. And when it comes to a right guard or a starting center, like Bradbury's been better this year, but it's just a grind to find average guys along the offensive line. I'd rather just like sort of sacrifice. I'll take my chances at the linebacker position.
So you'll just
and I'd rather you just be great at evaluating and developing offensive linemen. But yeah, I'm with you, Eric Wilson.
That's a hell of a game by that kid.
Yep, he was in every category. Declan, what's your silver lining?
Irv Smith's finally alive. That's good. I mean, for God's sakes, he's been a ghost for the first 4 weeks, and he had 5 targets yesterday for 4 catches, 64 yards. It's not a world-beating performance, but it's a start. You could tell they made a conscious effort to get him the football early on and throughout that game. And I think he's someone that has to be dynamic and a big part of this offense going forward, especially for looking back looking forward to 2021 and figuring if the Vikings are in a championship window. You need someone like Irv Smith, who's 22 years old, most likely replacing Kyle Rudolph probably as soon as next year, to have big moments. And also you need an offense that game plans towards him. So I was excited that at least Irv Smith got some targets yesterday.
How'd you guys feel when the Vikings got the ball back down by one? They had one timeout, I think, and 15 seconds to get like 35 yards into field goal range. And the first, so you basically have two plays, right? Maybe three. And the first play, and you have to gain chunks of yards. And the first play was just a little dump off pass for 8 yards to Kyle Rudolph. I was like, come on.
Classic, dude. It was classic.
And I love Kyle. But, I mean, I don't know if he needs to be on the field in that spot.
That's not the point, though. Drive the ball down the damn field. I'm with you.
I would say my silver lining in this one is just, in general, going into this game, the Vikings were knocking on the door of being a top-5 offense. Yards per play, PFF, they were like the 7th best offense, Pro Football Focus going into this game. And I'm not sure they did anything to sort of negate that trend. I think they moved the ball 450 yards. They averaged, they ran for 200 yards, 5 yards a carry. And if not for just some boneheaded turnovers and the interception by Kirk Cousins. By the way, they had 9 different guys catch a pass. I'm sorry, 8 different guys catch a pass, 9 different guys targeted. So they're spreading it around. He found Adam Thielen 9 times.
Maybe too much.
It's a really good offense. I'd like to see a little bit more Justin Jefferson. Yeah. And like a little bit more than five targets to one of the best young receivers in the NFL.
I'm with you on that.
So I guess that's a nitpick. But overall, this offense is really good. And more often than not, they're going to score 27 or 30 points and just make life pretty easy on the defense, unless Russell Wilson has the ball with 2 minutes left. So that's my
solution. How about just get that fourth down? I'm sorry. That's also a nitpick.
It's true, though.
Just fall forward. It's an inch.
What's up with, like, the Vikings, when the Vikings have big running games, and then the Gopher football team has big running games in the Glenn Mason era? There's this, like, inability to get the 1 yard you need after running it down someone's throat for 3 hours.
It's called Minnesota sports.
Yeah. God. Sports gods. So, all right, that's silver linings.
Not really close. I knew if we got it was about a half a yard. If we got the half a yard, we win the game. So I was trying to win it. I told him, in the headset, you know, we didn't come here for this. Let's go win it.
Yeah, I mean, if we get it, you know, then it's obviously, you know, could close out the game. So, you know, hindsight's 20/20, and you know, we don't have the benefit of that. We're making tough decisions. So, we had run for, you know, roughly 200 yards and needed an inch, and you know, we weren't able to get it.
All right. Kirk and Mike Zimmer just reflecting and talking about the decision to go for it on fourth and one. So a couple quick plugs, and then we'll get into the things that we learned about the rest of the NFL on Sunday. If you missed an hour and 40-minute Vikings vent line session where we brought Vikings fans into the video, at one point, Chancey and Fargo started a literal dumpster fire on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So that was symbolic. You can check that out on YouTube if you want the video version, youtube.com/purpledailypodcast, or subscribe to the podcast itself on Apple, Spotify, and the all-new scorenorth.com. All right, let's get into the things we learned on NFL Sunday, gentlemen. Kind of an action-packed set of games and injuries. We'll start with Judd Zolgad here. Let's fire up some more appropriate music here, Dex.
First of all, what a red zone day yesterday. I mean, just, it was like football smack. It was unbelievable. 7 hours, me, the dog, Scott Hansen. Nothing to bother us. Unbelievable. All right. I have a 2-page list of things I learned, but I want to get to one thing from the late game because it's disturbing and it's also something I never need to see again in my life. Things I've learned. When you have what appears to be a football player whose leg or ankle is turned sideways, mm-hmm. and you're a camera crew, or more accurately, probably the producer of said telecast, can you get off the shot as soon as possible?
What do you mean? Because it's their job to document what's happening.
I agree with that, but the thing
how it
was,
lands with you is not their fault.
But when Dak Prescott got hurt and they showed his leg, and poor Romo goes, I think it might be a cramp, Jim. Yeah. I think he might be cramping, Jim.
Oh, he's a little dehydrated. And Jim, he's going to need a little water break.
Oh, Jim,
water break.
And his ankle is turned sideways. And I'm like, okay, I've seen enough now. I don't need to see more of this. And we see him grabbing his ankle, and it looked like he tried to straighten it out. And it was just so sad and so gross. But no, that is on a day that Alex Smith came back. In Washington, which is a great story. Like, I mean, it's an unbelievable story. On that day, for Dak Prescott to suffer what hopefully and does not look to be as bad, but is still a gruesome injury, it's just I didn't really need to see it that long. And then they kept showing it. They finally stopped, but they would show him going down. And when he went down, you could see it, the leg twisting. And it's just so...
They blurred it on SportsCenter this morning.
Okay, good for them. Yeah. Good for them. But I never need to see a man's leg or ankle sideways for as long as I live.
Did you guys... So I was actually watching the CBS feed of the game when that happened. And then like the few minutes afterwards. So they came back probably 5 or 10 minutes later from commercial break. And I'm throwing her under the bus. She's ordinarily an amazing sideline reporter, but they go down to Tracy Wolfson on the sideline for more on Dak Prescott's injury. Guys, I can confirm it is indeed a right ankle injury for Dak Prescott, and he will not return today.
Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you.
Or maybe ever. And I saw his ankle turn sideways. I don't need for you to confirm what I saw with my own two eyes.
We're going to confirm that it is a right ankle injury. It's like, it's literally, there's a bone sticking out of his
sock. And there was. That's the worst part. It was a compound fracture. A bone came out. Thank God we couldn't see it. But they announced it was a compound fracture. So a bone actually did rupture through the skin.
Declan's fine.
I just don't. I just don't. Okay. I love to watch football, but I don't. Need
I
to
had
see
a
it.
Drink in hand, and I almost threw it when they showed the replay. And you just
oh,
saw
I don't blame you.
I don't do well with that. There's a reason I'm in this industry and not in another one. I can't see it.
What,
I can't do it.
What's the injury that had you guys the most squeamish when you were watching it? There's two that come to mind.
Well, the Theismann one was beyond gross.
And see, that was a little bit before our time. I mean, I've seen the replay of that. Yeah, I mean, that, like, that was as bad. You're watching it, where you're like, oh my God.
The Louisville basketball player who had a compound fracture. The bone came through his leg.
Dude, and that wasn't just like the ankle bone.
That was his femur, wasn't it?
That was like his femur was sticking out of his leg, and he was like bleeding on the sidelines.
Was it Willis McGahee from Miami?
Yeah.
In college, that like he turned, but his leg didn't turn. Yes. That was also a really bad one, too.
This moment brought to you by
football.
Some orthopedic place, I don't know who.
All right, let's keep going around here. Declan. Things you learned on NFL Sunday.
Oh, my God. It was an eventful NFL Sunday. I will give you that. Obviously.
Thank you.
Obviously, I have a few takeaways. I still am waiting for my guy Jalen Hurts to get the starting role. Because Doug Peterson keeps doing this classic Doug Peterson thing where he's getting him involved in the Wildcat. And then he came in to, like, throw a pass when they were in the red zone yesterday. And I have no idea. I would love some Philly sports talk radio talks. I got to imagine they're coming after Carson Wentz like none other right now.
Yeah, I need to know what Angelo Cataldi is saying.
Let's find it
right now.
Let's find it. Let's play it.
God. But I would love to see him get a chance. Because like we were talking about that event line last night. Like at least if you're the Eagles, like you drafted a Heisman candidate. You have something in the wings if Carson Wentz really doesn't work. So you could turn to him eventually. I would love to see Jalen Hurts get some more time. Because the Eagles, it's fun watching the Eagles be a disaster. I will say that. It's kind of fun watching them implode on themselves. But I would like to see the rookie quarterback get some time.
You know what? How did that team win a freaking Super Bowl a couple years ago?
Nick Foles, baby.
I don't know.
Nick Foles.
Super weird. Carson Wentz was great then, but now he's terrible, apparently. Just an odd. I don't know how you. I understand how you go from Super Bowl contender to like taking a step back, but like this is beyond taking a step back.
Yeah. Just
and is Carson Wentz bad or not? Like, I can't figure it out.
I think he's bad.
Something's off. Like, he's talented, but. There's clearly a disconnect there somewhere.
Yeah, something's bad.
Football.
I learned that Kevin Stefanski is a really good NFL head coach. Another victory over the Colts were 3-1 going in. Now they're 3-2. The Browns are 4-1 for the first time since Bill Belichick coached the team in the mid-1990s. And they're doing it basically with a crutch game manager quarterback. Baker Mayfield is not playing all that well. And they're still putting up ridiculous yards. They're scheming the run game. They won that game by 9 points yesterday. And I still don't buy them as like legit contenders in the AFC because I just don't think Baker Mayfield's good enough. But Kevin Stefanski deserves some real credit for what they've put together in Cleveland and the way they've got that offensive line going. And it just makes you – I know there was some discussion here last year, January, February, some Mike Zimmer trade rumors to Dallas.
There were people that wanted Stefanski here.
Yeah,
Do
you empower Kevin Stefanski to be the head coach? And they decided, nope, Mike Zimmer's the guy. Gary Kubiak's going to step in. And if you would have offered Kevin Stefanski that head coaching job, there's no way he goes to Cleveland over Minnesota. But they would have had to fire Mike Zimmer.
Yep.
Now, if there was like a not uncomfortable way to have put Kevin Stefanski in charge of the whole operation and made Mike Zimmer a highly paid defensive coordinator, that would have been great.
Nope.
But good luck having that conversation with Mike.
Football.
I learned that a guy by the name of Chase Claypool of the Pittsburgh Steelers is really good at football. Yeah, Four touchdowns.
Awesome.
He was fantastic. So this goes back to, again, a very important thing about this sport in particular, right? There are certain positions at which guys, if given an opportunity, can and will break out and become stars or really good. You know, Chase Claypool, I don't think, is a guy who... when he was taken by the Steelers, we expected to become a household name. But in watching his game and pair him with a good quarterback, guess what he becomes? A really good, effective player. So it's so funny how we get stuck on these threads of, well, Antonio Brown is gone. Roethlisberger screwed. I mean, it's just not going to work now, right? Mm-hmm. And then a guy comes along and replaces him and does a really good job. I think that there's certain positions in football. Wide receiver is one. Linebacker can be one where you can find really talented, really good players who can go late in the draft or sometimes not even be drafted. And if you cultivate them right and plug them in, they can become pretty damn good really quickly.
Yeah. Also, Notre Dame just pumps out NFL wide receivers, and like once every 3 or 4 years, there's just a guy that comes in, Golden Tate. You know, Jeff Samardzija would probably have been this too if he wasn't also a pro baseball player. Chase Claypool, I think, ranks very high among names that sound like they would be ballers characters on HBO. It's like, it's just like a well-crafted, created football name. Wide receiver.
It is good. Yeah, Claypool.
Chase Claypool.
You're right. It's
going
perfect.
Down the field.
Football.
I love it.
Dex?
I think I learned that Derek Carr is pretty good. I've been pretty suspect on him. I would even loop him into like the same Kirk Cousins discussion where like, all right, if the infrastructure around him is really good and everything goes right, this guy can be a pretty successful quarterback. He went toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes. And in fact, he outplayed Patrick Mahomes yesterday. And I know we give a lot of crap to John Gruden when he first took over. He trades Khalil Mack. He hires Mike Mayock as his GM, who's just a bigger buffoon than he is. But the Raiders might be onto something here. They're 3-2, and they gave the Kansas City Chiefs a rare home loss. Derek Carr looked great. Maybe the Raiders aren't a complete dumpster fire anymore. Maybe they're trending in the right direction.
Yeah, that was just an amazing game by John Gruden and Derek Carr. I can't decide if Kansas City is sort of taking a step back and if the league is just catching up to them in some ways, or if they are just a little bit hungover and bored by winning a Super Bowl and then they're going to just turn it on in November and December. But that game validates Declan and I's decision during the pigskin pecking order last week to put the Green Bay Packers number one above the Kansas City Chiefs.
That was
it just felt like the Chiefs were playing with fire a little bit and ready to lose.
That was a fun game, too.
Yep.
That was a really fun
total
game.
Total shootout.
Football.
All right. I learned that Teddy Bridgewater continues to be the one that got away for the Minnesota Vikings. Now, I get that Atlanta was on the verge of firing a coach, and Teddy just gave the extra nudge into not only firing a coach, but firing the general manager and blowing everything up yesterday. But Teddy, 73% completions, 313 yards, a couple of touchdowns, and on the season, five games for Ted, 73% completions, six Teddy. Touchdowns. He's just sort of the best version that we thought he could be a few years ago. He's also averaging almost 300 yards through the air, has a traditional passer rating of 101.3. So all of the numbers are sort of what you would expect Teddy Bridgewater to have morphed into, and he's doing it in a Panthers uniform instead of a Vikings uniform.
And it's classic Teddy for a team that started 0-2, got off a little slow start. They lose Christian McCaffrey, and I believe I was reading in The Athletic, their team reporter said, it was Bridgewater that gathered the troops after they lost McCaffrey. They started going to us and asked, do we want to win? Like, what do we want to do here? Like, he basically galvanized the locker room. Classic, like, everything we've always heard about Teddy Bridgewater being a leader. Like,
we have audio of that, too.
Hey, you held him at 20 points, man. You gave us a chance at the end. But I got three words for you. You like that?
So what did he do again?
Super fired
he
up.
Galvanized him?
He galvanized him.
I'm not familiar
with
that.
His teammates
that's
believe
not what I want
in
for my,
him.
That's not what I want for my quarterback.
Oh, interesting. Well,
I want my guy to shrink.
You know, I want Teddy to go back and look at the film, and, you know, I want to make sure that he knows and understands the right
shrink
play
in the moment.
Right,
that's my motto when it comes to my quarterback play. Shrink in the moment.
I love Teddy.
Teddy Bridgewater, career record as a quarterback here, okay? 25-14. And it's not let's not pretend that he has been saddled with like Andy Reid Chiefs infrastructure here or Bill Belichick Patriots infrastructure, right? Mike Zimmer, decent head coach, also wasn't the most like quarterback friendly coach and system in 2014-15.
Yep.
And then Carolina without Christian McCaffrey, Carolina was expected to go like 3-13 and just be test driving Teddy Bridgewater. Well, they've already got three wins and we're in the second week of October. So I quarterback wins are not something that you should hang everything on because you can get tricked pretty easily too. But 25-14 is pretty telling. And I think we can sort of validate that with the eye test. That he's just not the type of guy that's going to blow up and wreck a game for you.
I think we call it intangibles. Hard to quantify, but he's got them.
Yes, indeed.
All
yes,
right.
He does. You got one more?
I got one more for you, boys.
Okay.
I learned two things about two veteran quarterbacks who were playing simultaneously. I learned that Ryan Fitzpatrick, God bless this man with a big beard, can still play and roll up a big game against San Francisco, semicolon, because conversely, I also learned Phillip Rivers is stealing the Colts' money, and if the Indianapolis Colts had gone out and gotten a real QB, they're a really good team. Like, they're a really nice team. They've got one problem, a quarterback who has no business still playing this game.
Aren't they still paying Jacoby Brissett, like, $25 million?
Well, he's still there, right?
I think so.
Put him in. Like Phillip Rivers yesterday. My God, did you guys see this?
I thought it was very windy in Cleveland yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay.
How about the safety?
Woof.
How about the safety when he threw? Oh my! The whole thing.
Plus, his receivers are garbage. Like T.Y. Hilton. I mean, who's that guy? Come on,
Phillip.
Who names their kid T.Y.?
Please, Phillip.
This guy.
Please, seriously.
He has no weapons anywhere.
Find a Zoom podium today and announce your retirement. Just announce your retirement.
The Colts are paying their quarterbacks $46 million against the cap right now.
Wow.
That's hilarious.
46. 25 to Phillip Rivers, 21 to Jacoby Brissett.
How bad is Brissett? Like, how bad? If they won't start Brissett, how bad is he?
He's fine.
He's fine.
Well, then Phillip Rivers should be benched. I think he should retire.
You should have retired.
It was just one bad game. All right.
Oh, my God.
It's football.
Would you quit defending your father?
He's a little icy hot on that shoulder.
A little icy hot? He needs the whole thing. You should dump it on his head and see what happens.
All right, those are things we learned in the NFL on Sunday. Before we're also going to pump out an episode of Purple Daily for an even deeper dive on the Minnesota Vikings. We do Viking statements on Mondays on Purple Daily, so check us out there. But last night, so the NHL Stanley Cup Finals ended a week or two ago. And then last night, the NBA Finals ended. Just a total anticlimactic blowout. The Lakers are up by 30 points at halftime, and the Heat just looked like a team that had been shorthanded and scraping. And it's tough to ask Jimmy Butler to just do that for like seven games, and they finally hit the wall last night. So LeBron wins his fourth title. And my question to you guys is, now that we've seen the two main men's professional leagues, the NHL and the NBA, and of course the WNBA had a bubble too, but now that we've seen a summer and an early fall of bubble sports play out, what was your evaluation? Did the league succeed? Are you glad that they did this? Would you be open to it if needed next year? Thoughts on bubbles?
I thought it was absolutely...
Talk about bubbles.
My feeling on bubbles is this. I thought it was absolutely outstanding both ways. I mean, look, they took what appeared to be a very dire situation that I think most of us at one point in time back in the spring probably agreed that all of these sports wouldn't play, and did a fantastic job. Like, they did a great job, and they found the key, which is the way that you can potentially keep the virus out is to isolate your coaches and athletes completely. And they did and I thought hockey, great job. Basketball, great job. And look, I know it's not ideal, and I know that I'm sure that there's a lot of people who were in those bubbles who couldn't stand it. But if you wanted to get through the rest of your year, this was the answer. So I thought, bravo, fantastic. I'm very curious to see if both the NBA and hockey have to start their 2020-21 in a bubble or something, because I don't think we're going to be at the point of vaccine yet, and I don't know that they're going to want teams to travel a ton. They might. But I thought when it started, it was really dicey. And by about halfway through, I said, no, you know what? It's really effective.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was fun. I mean, I know that the TV numbers for both NHL and NBA were not what they were, and I'm sure some of that. There's a lot of people that are saying, like, I'll never watch sports again, as long as there's politics in sports. And I mean, there's politics in literally everything. And also, just quick side tangent, the people who complain, like, I don't like politics. Like, I mean, politics is like this huge umbrella. It's education. It's social issues.
I go to
all
sports
things, right?
For fun, Phil.
Right.
I don't want people to have feelings.
I mean, Muhammad Ali literally changed his name from Cassius Clay and took political stances.
And I quit watching boxing back then because of that.
So there are, I'm sure there are
that was it.
Some people that vowed to never watch sports and they weren't as interested in watching the NBA or even the NHL. But I thought it was fun. And honestly, just like to pull back the curtain for guys like us, I mean, we make a living blabbing about sports and trying to entertain you guys on a regular basis. And the NBA was the first league to jump back in after COVID hit to say, you know what, we're going to do this. We don't have all the information yet, but we're just going to try and seal ourselves off and bring back sports. And so I think we're thankful that the NBA took the lead on that and the NHL followed quickly and that those leagues went forward. I do worry that the NFL is starting to spin out of control a little bit with positives and scheduling issues.
You know what, though?
Because they're not using a bubble.
Why are they? I don't get this. Why are they so concerned about 16 games for each team? Like, if you get to 14 games, that's fine. Like, that's the thing I don't get. And baseball is the same way. We got to get. No, you don't. It doesn't matter. Like, the fact that you're playing is fun. Yesterday, red zone was great, okay? So if a few teams don't play 16 games, do you know how much I care? Zero.
Well, but they're going to get to that point because once...
that's okay.
As they start to exhaust bye weeks, they're either going to have to add a week 18.
Yeah, which they've talked about doing, which I don't do that.
Or they're going to have to cancel games.
Yeah, cancel games. I don't care. Like, I don't... It's a year of a pandemic. You're playing through it, okay? Not a big deal as far as, oh my God, the Falcons played 17 or, you know, played 14 games. What am I going to do? I'm fine. It's going to be fine.
Dex, are you pro or anti bubble sports? Like, if you had to do this again sometime,
I would do it again. If it means we get sports, I would do it again. I think the NHL did it phenomenally. I mean, how in the hell? I shouldn't say how in the hell. It's amazing that it took a global pandemic to make Gary Bettman look like the best commissioner in sports, who's usually been the laughingstock. And that's not a knock on Adam Silver either, who clearly is the primo and the best commissioner of all the four men's major sports in this country. But I think the NHL hit it on the head. I think the NBA did a phenomenal job. I mean, who would have thought the Miami Heat would make this run? I know, Jay Williams was on our show last Tuesday. Would the Miami Heat made this run if there was equal home court advantage? I don't think they do.
Yeah.
So I think it was a phenomenal task, and I would do it again. But it probably would get more complicated if you have to do like a full season. Well, I don't know how that would work.
Players would probably balk.
Yeah.
Because then if I have to be away from friends and family to play games in January, I mean
Jimmy Butler wouldn't balk. Jimmy Butler would prefer to be away from everybody else.
Exactly. Yes, but the important thing to the entire bubble concept this time around was this: it was all playoffs. I think if you start to go, well, hey, okay, here's the deal. You're going to Edmonton bubble for regular season game two. People would be like, oh, no, I'm not.
No, we're good on that. Yeah.
But anyway, great job.
Yep. It was.
Glad it was back.
It was a blast. And so we're going to devote the next hour here to our show of just debating LeBron or Michael Jordan. Are you guys down for that?
I'd like to talk Wilt as well. Can we mix in some Russell Chamberlain discussion?
Who's the better player? Michael Jordan or LeBron? Come on, let's go deep.
Now, I'm going to tell you right now, the Celtics teams of the 60s would have kicked the ass of this Lakers team up and down the court.
Legit question for you. The Lakers were touting their 17th championship last night.
We're proud.
I mean, five of them, right? Five? We got five Minneapolis Lakers championships?
Ask Sid. I'm sure he played instrumental
roles in those. Why don't we claim those? Why do we let them claim those? Is that fair?
I have no idea. No, it's not fair.
It's not fair.
I feel like those are our championships. That's the most successful team in Minnesota sports
history.
They're
the Lakers because they're from here.
It is kind of weird.
Last I checked, there were no Lakers in Los Angeles.
Yeah, how many lakes are even in Southern California? I mean, they have a big one. It's called the Pacific Ocean.
I'll never get this one thing. Why on earth, at one time when teams moved, did they just take their name? The Utah Jazz makes no sense. New Orleans Jazz, great name. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Now we're going to Utah. The Lakers, why didn't they change their name?
I don't know. It's too late now.
Too late now.
Branding and stuff.
But like at the time, we're going to move to Los Angeles. Let's just keep it the Lakers.
Maybe Sid Hartman had something to do with that.
Maybe.
Ask him about that.
We'll get out.
So, all right. That's a wrap on this episode of Mackie and Judd. And again, be sure to check out Vikings Vent Line on the Purple Daily Podcast feed.
Let's talk Wes Unseld now.
We'll see you guys tomorrow.